I want to start by inviting you to ask yourself a question with me. And that question is, do I trust Jesus? Another way to say it is, do I believe Jesus? Do I trust him? Do I believe him? And probably most of us would just be like, yeah, of course I trust Jesus. Of course I believe Jesus, right? So it seems like a pretty, it'd be awkward to stand up and say no really loudly in this room, probably. We commend you for your bravery, but do I trust Jesus? Do I believe Jesus? Now notice the difference there that it would make, instead of saying, do I believe Jesus, to say, do I believe in Jesus? Because many people believe in Jesus. He's a historical figure. It's one thing to believe that Jesus existed and that he came and lived and did all these things. But it's a whole other thing to actually believe him. Like, for example, yesterday we had some guy named Bruce, dressed in a red suit, come and sit on our couch, which is kind of a deception. It's actually three office chairs with a blanket draped over it because we didn't have a couch. And kids came excited to take a picture with this guy, because many kids believe in Santa. They believe that he exists. But most kids don't actually trust or believe Santa. I mean, the narrative goes like this, right? There's this guy, this ominous figure who lives at the North Pole, which sounds awful. I used to live in the prairies. I can't imagine moving back there, let alone the North Pole all year long. But he does get to travel the whole world once a year, though, so that's kind of a benefit of the job. But he lives in the North Pole, and apparently he's, like, watching everybody, right? It's a little weird, a little unsettling, a little uncomfortable. And it says, like, you know, the story goes, like, you better not shout, you better not cry, you better not pout. Basically, Santa's up there judging your behavior, good or bad, all year round, and you're going to get presents or you're not going to get presents. Name a single kid where that actually changes their behavior, right? Like, what kid, like, maybe a few days before Christmas, parents could, like, use that to impose good behavior on their kid. It's like, oh, Santa's not going to, he's going to give you coal, you know? It's like, in 2023, it's like, coal? You know, you might get arrested for that. But it says, Santa's going to give you coal. He's not going to give you presents. But, like, what kid in, like, on, like, March 12th is, like, going to do something bad and, like, wait, I shouldn't do it. Santa, he's watching. You know, this whole line, you better not cry. It's like Santa's obviously never met a child. Like, for the first year or so of their life, that's the only way they communicate. Kids don't actually believe Santa. They don't trust Santa. They believe he exists. And I'm sorry if there's an adult in the room where I'm kind of dismantling. Maybe you still believe that. I'm dismantling that. I apologize. But they believe in him. Many of us, I think, believe in Jesus. But many of us, I think, myself included, struggle to actually trust Jesus, to believe him. He says a lot of things, and many of the things he says, we like. You know, you often hear people quote some of the things we really like, don't judge, or you'll be judged as well, or let the person who hasn't sinned throw the first stone. You know, those kinds of quotes, we love those. We really like those. Those are the ones that we're like, we put those, like, room decor on, like, our, you know, in our houses and stuff like that. We're like, oh, this is a good quote. But then sometimes Jesus says stuff that we don't like quite as much. And we kind of start to have, like, selective hearing or selective trusting. It's kind of like Jesus has this buffet of teachings and we kind of skip dishes, you know. It's kind of like, oh, I'm not so into this. I don't want to waste a buffet on salad. Ooh, sushi bar over there. You know, it's like picking and choosing what we like about what Jesus says and leaving some of it behind. This type of selective hearing exists in many of our relationships. If you have kids or have ever been a kid, you know exactly what I'm talking about, right? Like, you could be in the same room as your child screaming at 140 decibels for them to clean their room and somehow they won't hear it. Yet you're kilometers away at a grocery store and you whisper to your partner, maybe we should get ice cream. And from kilometers away at home, the child's ears perk up and they're like, I heard that. Ice cream? Ice cream for supper? I think we do that a lot with Jesus. I know I do that. If you don't, then you might be a few steps ahead of me. This morning, we're going to be looking at this passage where Jesus teaches this. He offers a statement. He often offers some pretty challenging statements, but he offers a statement that I think really would call us to question if we actually trust him. When he says something, do we believe that this is the God who created the universe saying something where we can lean into those words and try to embrace that truth? Or do we think it's just some kind of good historic teacher where we can kind of say, well, I agree with that. I disagree with that. I'm not sure about that. My inclination would be to believe that Jesus is someone who speaks truth and that we can trust. And that the process of leaning into his teachings is actually not so much an academic endeavor of learning more, but it's more of a personal endeavor of trusting more. Leaning into the preacher on the mountain saying, even though it's tough, I'm going to take you at your word. In the series that we've started, Matthew 5, we've kind of been jumping around to the different Beatitudes, and we're skipping to the last one, and Graham's going to be jumping back to another one on December 31st, but then we'll be done these eight opening statements. Jesus has said kind of a bit of a range of things. Some of them that land a little bit better with us, like blessed are the merciful. It's like, yeah, we can get that. But then blessed are those who mourn. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness. It's a little tougher. Blessed are the peacemakers. That sounds pretty good in our world. I think we all think we're better at peacemaking than we actually are in practice. But it's like, that sounds pretty good. Blessed are the poor in spirit. But we're about to land on one that like nobody likes, that nobody wants to hear. But it's a teaching, a statement that gets repeated throughout Scripture. And this is what Jesus says. He says, blessed are those who are persecuted because of righteousness, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who are persecuted. I don't think at any point in culture, if Jesus were to stand up and say, blessed are you if you get persecuted, you have a bunch of people standing up and be like, oh, amen, yeah, sign me up. I'm so in, right? Like, this is what I'm here for. People flocked to Jesus when he was offering food and healing and all the good things that made their lives happier and easier. All of a sudden he gets up, he says, blessed are those who are persecuted. Jesus has said some kind of weird things in the Beatitudes up until this point. Remember this Beatitude, this blessed means find true happiness, satisfaction, fulfillment, bliss in this. He said some things that are kind of more normal, some things that kind of land weird. They come with these interesting promises. But I think by the end of the first seven, if I was Jesus' like PR team or like on his like social media team or one of his brand ambassadors, at this point I'd be like, Jesus, you gotta tone it down a bit, bro. Like, you're making it really hard for us to market this Jesus thing. You know, it's like, you know, merch sales are going down. It's hard to keep up with some of the things you're saying. But then Jesus, he's kind of like, oh yeah, you ain't heard it, nothing yet. And he ends with this one, blessed are those who are persecuted because of righteousness. It's kind of like, you know, those politicians who shouldn't be allowed their phones with Twitter at 3 a.m. and they're tweeting out crazy things, and their PR team the next day is like, hey, let's maybe delete that one. Luckily on X you can like edit them now. But anyways, it's like, maybe we shouldn't do that. I wonder how many people thought of Jesus like that. Or it's like, Jesus, come on, dude. In the church we often like to soft sell kind of the message, right? In fact, I'll be really honest, and it's easy to do because I don't think we have a ton of visitors this morning, but this passage was coming up the day after we had this event where we had a bunch of visitors at Pilgrim, and I thought, well, maybe some visitors are going to come tomorrow, and I had actually thought maybe I should switch the passage and like do it out of order or whatever, and maybe I should have, but I was like, you know what, like, I don't want to be the type of church or the type of person who kind of like gets people in with like the easy stuff, and then later there's kind of the fine print of, hey, persecution comes along with this thing, you know? Jesus is pretty upfront about what it's about. He doesn't soft sell it. He doesn't water it down. He doesn't dumb it down. And Jesus talks, this isn't a one-off. This isn't just like the disciples aren't like, ooh, that was a weird. Like, Jesus regularly, he says, you got to take up your cross and follow me. He says, your family might hate you for it. He says, it might bring brokenness in your relationships. He says that following him is like denying yourself daily. That's a really, really tough call. So then the question isn't just, can we logic that out from a human perspective? Can I be like, okay, well, this is why it worked. The bigger question is just, do I actually trust Jesus? When Jesus says that, do I say, you know what? I think this guy knows more about what he's talking about than I know about what I'm talking about. Jesus invites people on this journey. He says, blessed are those who are persecuted because of righteousness, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. And this actually checks out, because all throughout history, people are always persecuted when they stand up for what is true and what is right. It's when we compromise and when we're wishy-washy that people kind of don't have an issue with us. But when people actually take a stand for what's true, like, it's like, Rosa Parks didn't get on the bus and resist moving from the seat that she was entitled to sit in. And then people were like, oh, good job. People were like patting her on the back as she got arrested. And people were like, you know, tweeting out pictures like, our hero, she was being slammed and she was being slandered and she was being mistreated because she was standing up for truth and justice and what's right. Same with Martin Luther King. He was standing up for something that was good, something that was equitable, something that was very Jesus-y. And people from all walks of life, from all religions, from all different spheres, were burning crosses on his yard, were throwing bombs at his house, were attacking him. This is the way of standing up for what is true and what is right. So Jesus says, blessed are those who are persecuted because of righteousness, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Notice how Jesus doesn't say, hey, blessed are you if you're persecuted. Blessed are you if you happen to be persecuted. Or blessed are you if you accidentally randomly bump into this thing. And like, because as 2023 Canadian Christians, it's pretty easy for us to read this and be like, well, yeah, Jesus was preaching during like a time when they're imperialized by the evil Roman Empire. So that was like relevant now. We have a lot of ways of justifying this kind of text away. In fact, I don't know if you know this, but in Jeremiah 17, the Bible describes the human heart as something that's deceptive beyond cure. I think we've all experienced this practice subconsciously. We don't like to admit it, where we hear something or we find something in life and we don't like it. Even if we know it's true, we find it convicting or challenging. We don't like it. So the heart, in great partnership with the brain, says, I need some kind of justification. I need an excuse. I need something that will make this choice sound noble so that I can skirt around what's actually virtuous and noble. And our brain goes to work and is very good at coming up with kinds of excuses and ways to skip around this. So it's like, well, Jesus is talking to a persecuted people. Or maybe if persecution does pop up, we should act in a certain way. No, Jesus doesn't say, blessed are you if this happens, or blessed are those who do well during this when this happens. Or, you know, and he doesn't say, hey, you know what? If this happens, I'm so sorry, bro. Like, I'll be with you. No, he just says, this is a good thing. If you experience persecution and hardship and challenge for following me, blessed are those who are persecuted for righteousness. It's almost as though Jesus is saying that if you're walking in the path of righteousness and you're never experiencing hardship or challenge, you might be missing something on the path of righteousness. That's a hard thing for me to say, because one thing I've learned is that it's a lot easier for me to preach a message like this on a Sunday morning than to live it out on a Tuesday afternoon when the persecution and the challenge actually shows up. Jesus continues. It's interesting. There are these eight Beatitudes and all of them are quite short, but this last one, it's quite a bit longer. It's almost as though this is like, in my imagination, maybe Jesus says a little bit more because it's a little bit more relevant. He says, blessed are you when people insult you, persecute you, and falsely say all kinds of evil against you. Since I'm reading this from this Bible, it's maybe like landing a little bit like better. But if I were to just get up in any forum in the world, if I just get up and I said, hey guys, you know what's so good? Like if I was going to do a TED talk, I'd be like, you know what? I've like unlocked the secret of a happy life. It's being insulted and persecuted. And when people lie about you, ultimate satisfaction. Like no one ever, right? This is not the thing. Especially Jesus is talking, the culture he's talking in is what we call an honor-shame culture that still exists culturally in some parts of the world, not so much in Canada. I'm starting to think more in Canada what we have is just a shame-shame culture. But anyways, in an honor-shame culture, it's like in an honor-shame culture, what you have is like you have people who are, the way you're seen, the way you're perceived in the world brings honor or shame. It's like it creates a lot of your identity. So being persecuted is already hard, but then the whole world looks at you because you're being persecuted and looks down on you and shames you for that. And that would make it really hard in that moment. And maybe we don't have that exactly in this moment. Maybe actually the underdogs get cheered on a little bit in our culture. But in our culture, we've got a different challenge, and that's our obsession and accessibility to comfort. I mean, we live our lives for every stinking comfort we can find. Jesus' audience, they're just like, hey man, we got like 5 loaves of bread and 2 fish. Could you feed us? Because we're hungry. Here, we could like skip the dishes from anywhere we want. We don't even have to like do anything. Right? You roll up to a random church downtown Vancouver and they're going to feed you like 400 pancakes for free, right? It's like there's comfort everywhere. And when we did that, it was crazy yesterday. We're at some random free church event and we're like eating better than most of the world is eating. Like this cream cheese, anybody else have the cream cheese icing yesterday? Well, I know Graham did, but like, anybody else have the cream? It was crazy. It was so good. It was so good. And we're so obsessed with comfort. If we miss one meal, we consider ourselves to be hangry. It's like we spend all our time seeking more comfort and luxury. We have more comfort and luxury than anyone else has ever had, but we're now more obsessed and addicted to it. And the idea of going through something hard is so counterintuitive for us. We are so sterilized against discomfort, hardship, challenge, difficulty, that type of thing. It's actually interesting during COVID. I'm not about to share any kind of political view. I don't care about that. I don't talk about that. It's interesting in a culture that's really about control and comfort, this thing pops up and we're just like, well, we'll fix it. We'll show this invisible virus who's boss. And we do everything to protect ourselves just to keep ourselves alive. Whereas I think historically in many cultures, many people would say, what do we do to really care for people going through such a hard time? Personal comfort is such an idol and such a god in our world. And I'm not saying we should be reckless and unsafe with stuff like that. But we're so committed to it that this teaching is so hard, myself included. For Jesus to say, hey, go face something uncomfortable. Someone might say something really mean about you. Oof. I mean, it's interesting. That's like really uncomfortable for us. We're reading a story about a guy who got like nailed to a cross, right? It's like, Jesus says, blessed are you when people insult you, persecute you, and falsely say all kinds of evil against you because of me. That because of me and because of righteousness is pretty important, just as like a little side note. I mean, some people go out and kind of play the victim and get martyred for all kinds of reasons. It should be because we're passionately following Jesus. As if that isn't enough, as if Jesus saying, hey, blessed are you, insults, persecution, lies. I'm sure we've all been insulted. I'm sure we've all had people say untrue things about you. It's not fun. As if that isn't enough, Jesus doesn't say just say blessed. He says this. He says, rejoice and be glad, because great is your reward in heaven, for in the same way they persecuted the prophets who were before you. Rejoice. Be glad. Here's the simplistic version of what Jesus is saying. When living out your faith passionately costs you big time when it hurts, smile. Get stoked. Oh man, I fail at that all the time. I think about this with my kids. My kids are always seeking the most immediate satisfaction they can get. If I say to them, hey, I give you one candy right now or 100 candies tomorrow, guaranteed they choose the one candy today. In fact, the other day, my daughter, my five-year-old, she said, I hope for Christmas I get $2 million. She said, I hope I get 2 million presents. I was like, wow, that's a lot. She's like, no, actually, I want $2 million that I can go buy my own presents. And I was like, but 2 million presents is actually worth a lot more than $2 million. Even if they bought them all at Dollar Tree and you factor in tax and everything, like it's way more value. And she's like, no, I want the $2 million. Like, no, like you don't understand, Avra. If you take these and sell them on Marketplace, you probably will have like $10 or $20 million. She's like, I want the dollars. And I was like, it's crazy. And we can laugh about that. But how short-sighted are we seeking decisions all the time that are not healthy for us, that are not helpful for us, avoiding things because we're trying to find this temporary, immediate, like gratifying comfort that the world has to offer. When earlier, I remember what Jesus said? He said, he's the one that comforts us. Blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. True comfort only comes in Jesus, and we seek these temporary things, and we're like my five-year-old making the worst financial decision. Well, I mean, it's irrelevant. She's not getting $2 million for Christmas. I'm just deciding if I'm even going to buy her anything for Christmas. So anyways, she's not getting, not because I don't love her, but we just don't do presents a lot. Anyways, she's like, this choice, but we do that all the time, and God must just be rolling his eyes like he's driving the van with us in the back, and he's just like, guys, just trust me. And if I could say to my daughters, if you would just learn to just trust me and take my word for it, there's something so much better on offer. Jesus is going to come back one day, and he's going to remove all the persecution, all the suffering, all the insults, all the lies. He's going to bring ultimate healing. But because me, like many, struggle to trust that, we seek to make it all good now and avoid any challenge, to avoid real sacrifices around our faith, and to live a really comfortable type of faith. And one of the problems in our culture is that we've got these guys on, and some girls, but lots of them are guys, on TV preaching this, what we call prosperity gospel or health and wealth gospel, where they turn the Bible somehow. It's amazing how they do it. I don't think they've read the whole thing, but they turn it into this thing where they say, if you just believe in Jesus and you do these things and all this, you're going to like have a whole bunch of money and you're never going to get sick and you're going to, and that, like they must have ripped this page out of the Bible, you know? They say, if you just donate to my private jet fund, you're going to get healed. And so, I'll tell you what, the prosperity gospel is true. Some people do get really rich because of the prosperity gospel. That's those guys on TV buying jet after jet off of donations of people who are seeking a comfort and a hope that they're being lied to about from these prosperity preachers, because only true comfort and true satisfaction and true hope is found in one person, and that's Jesus. And he says, as I walk on the path of persecution, follow me. It's quite illogical what we've done to embrace. I call it even the prosperity gospel light. Like most of us are like, okay, if I donate to this guy on TV, I'm not going to like magically be rich and healthy and all that. But many of us, I think, kind of embrace like, you know, like when you don't pay for the app and it's kind of the light version of the app on your phone, we've kind of embraced like a light version of the prosperity gospel, myself included, where we expect a certain level of comfort or whatever from following Jesus. And really what it is it's just kind of worldly ideas that kind of like come in. And Jesus says, I'm not really thinking about that. Many times when people talk about the gospel and about the Sermon on the Mount, they call it countercultural. I don't really like that terminology because I don't think Jesus is here to like counterculture. I think he's just here to lay a culture, and sometimes it has some things that are simple. Like his standard isn't our culture. His standard is his truth and his way, and he invites us into that. And it's quite illogical for us to embrace this idea that following Jesus can be quite comfortable and easy when what we see is he is walking this path to the cross. And every character you read about in the Bible, they all, like, I mean, some of the classics, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they got thrown in a giant bonfire. So you guys live in BC, you don't know what bonfires are. Some places people are allowed to light wood on fire outside, and it creates, anyways. They get thrown in a bonfire. Daniel gets thrown in, like, this hole with a bunch of lions. You know, all of Jesus's like followers, so many of them are persecuted and killed because of their faith. And here we are in 2023 reading these stories and being like, wow, that's inspiring. Now I hope someone doesn't say something mean about me to someone else because I'm following Jesus. And I'm not minimizing that. I don't like it when people say unkind things about me. But it's quite illogical to think that we are walking in that community of faith. Hebrews says, since we're surrounded by a great cloud of witnesses, these people who were persecuted for their faith before, Jesus says, in the same way they persecuted the prophets who came before you. It's quite illogical for us to think, well, it should just be this really easy, cushy, comfortable following Jesus. No, he's on his way toward the cross, and he says, come and follow me on this journey. I want to say something about persecution because it's a vague term, right? Like, we think about persecution, we think about martyrs, and there have been so many throughout church history. William Tyndale gets martyred so that we can have this book, and nowadays we kind of hardly even read it, even though he gave his life for it. And it's like people are persecuted and hurt and all that, and we kind of think about it in that way. I think persecution comes in a lot of different ways. I think one of the great persecutions that we experience living in modern Canada, and this is just my idea, is it's actually like a self-inflicted persecution because it's this act of giving up the temporary and worldly comforts that we feel entitled to, and we experience a suffering or a loss or a hardship because it's that idea of letting go of that and embracing and trusting what Jesus has for us. It's never been harder to be generous people. It's actually quite a bit easier to be generous when you have nothing, right? Like, it's like, well, if I had money, I'd give it away. But now we have so much. We're so rich. Our economy's horrible, but somehow we're still, like, surviving, right? Like, it's crazy. Most people in the world would not be able to, like, weather the inflation that we're going through right now. People would literally lose their lives all over the place in the world if their economy went through what we're going through, or their housing and their, like, what it costs to buy food and stuff like that. So I think one of the things Jesus would say is that if you're going to follow him, you're going to face this persecution that comes from all the demands and all the luxuries and the comforts of the world and what it means to actually start giving up some of those and surrendering some of those and actually be a radically generous people. Jesus was the most generous person who ever lived. He came and he had a terminal disease called generosity that he gave and gave and gave until the last thing he had to give was his life. I think that's a form of persecution and challenge. I think persecution and challenge sometimes comes from the world around us, from like outside of the church. But I think that that's often what people think, is they are like, oh, the government this or that, or the, you know, people at my workplace. When Jesus is speaking here, he's mostly speaking to a churchy audience. Jesus's main challenges were against the church folks. So when Jesus talks about persecution, I mean, who is he killed by? He was killed by the church leaders, right? The religious leaders. Jesus's big challenge is to people inside the church. He doesn't get people around him on the mountain and be like, all right, it's us versus them. Let me tell you how evil those people out there are. No, he says, let's work it out. Let's figure it out. Let's figure out how to embrace persecution, because it's going to come. It's often the deepest wounds that we as true followers of Jesus can experience comes from other people who claim the same name of Jesus around us. And it's quite surprising. I think in a faith community, it's great to share our lives with one another. And I've shared a bit of my story with you guys. And I actually want to share a little bit of my journey over the past couple of years. And I haven't actually shared publicly about this yet, because I want to give it a bit of time and space. And I don't know what the exact equation of how long you wait before you share about something. But I want to share a little bit about my journey and kind of how it intersects with this. And in a lot of ways, how Jesus has exposed in my life my own struggle in trusting him and taking him at his word here. Some of you know my story more than others, but anyways, if I'm retelling some of it, whatever, if you want to know more later, we can chat. Up until last summer, like 2 summers ago, 2022, I had spent 10 years working in churches, and I had worked at one church for a number of years, and then I moved out to the Lower Mainland to work at another church, and loved it, had a blast, was having a great time at this church in Langley. And then all of a sudden, I expected to be there for a decade, maybe two, I don't know, a long time as the lead pastor there. All of a sudden, one Wednesday afternoon, I was blindsided by a meeting with a few board members to let me know that my time there was done, with no lead up or anything like that. And what ensued after that was kind of chaos. A lot of untrue, really hurtful things spread from them about me, and what was even worse for me, about my family. And things being said to people, ideas being shared that were just wildly untrue, and were people saying false things against us. Now we could sit down and talk about all the details of why my job ended and all that. And but it was quite hurtful to have those things said about me. But I was kind of surprised that my job ended like that. But what I was more surprised about was how surprised I was about what was going on. I was like, oh, why would people do this? Why would people say untrue things? Why would people like be so mean? Why this persecution? Why this hurt? Why this challenge? When it wasn't long before, I had preached on this text at that very church. It says, blessed are you when people insult you, persecute you, and falsely say all kinds of evil against you. We could talk about the church is well forgiven. Those leaders, I bless them, pray for them. If you ever think about it, you can feel free to pray for them and ask God to continue to bless them. That's not the issue. The issue is in my own life, it exposed this lack of trust in God, where I was like, why am I so surprised? Why am I so hurt? Why am I struggling so much to embrace what Jesus is inviting me into, where he says, rejoice and be glad. Trust me, Ryan. Great is your reward in heaven. Jeremiah, Isaiah, Matthew, these guys experience stuff like that from church leaders. Jesus is saying, I experience stuff like that from church leaders. Rejoice and be glad, Ryan. I realized, man, a lot easier for me to preach this on a Sunday morning than it is for me to live it out on a Wednesday afternoon. It exposed in me a real lack of understanding of what it means to really trust Jesus. One thing that is so lost, I think, in the modern church here in Canada is a robust theology of suffering. If you've been married or in a leadership role or a parent or any other kind of station in life, you've probably experienced great growth in the good times, but you've probably experienced more growth and development in the challenging and hard times. I think at the heart of what Jesus is saying here is that a radical life lived bringing light into the darkness of the world really only grows and can be experienced truly when it's challenged. It's like going to the gym and lifting like a 1 pound weight over and over and over, right? It's called resistance training, because you grow and you develop when there's resistance. And I realized in this season, in this journey over the past year and a half, that this is the greatest opportunity for growth and development my faith has had in my entire adult years. And it made me actually start to regret some of the moments where I've worked hard to avoid suffering, where I've worked hard to avoid persecution, where I've worked hard to avoid the discomfort of people insulting me, falsely saying all kinds of evil against me. The times where I've worked hard to try to dispel, when someone says something untrue about me, all the time and energy I've wasted trying to go defend my reputation. And Jesus, when he dies, they spread lies about him. He doesn't fight it. He's just kind of whatever. It's a great opportunity for growth.